On today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast, we talk about money goals and financial planning for right-brained thinkers. Welcome to the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. I'm Jay Frosting, here with Luke Landis, the founder of Consumerism Commentary. Hi there, Luke.
Hi, Jay.
We're joined today by Kim Palmer, the author of Generation Earn and creator of Palmer's Planners. Kim, thank you for joining us on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
This year, or at the end of the last one, you created a set of documents called Palmer's Planners. You're offering a few different planners on shopping website Etsy, and it might be good for you to describe each for our audience. Could you take us through the planners and tell us about each one?
The whole concept behind my planner is to get at more right-brain thinking for financial planning. So more creative thinking, brainstorming, using images to really get at what our big goals are and the small steps we need to take to get to them. So that's why I started my planners. And I have a few different kinds. The most popular one is actually my money planner, which is based on Generation Earn. And like my book Generation Earn, it really takes people through the steps to take in various areas of your life, how to spend better, how to save better, investing, planning for retirement, planning for big lifestyle things like kids. So that's my big planner. And then I have other variations. So the baby planner, which of course is about getting ready to have a baby, the debt-free planner, which is about paying off debt in a more visual way. And I have a new planner too, the household planner, which is about getting your home bills and all the money side, the money aspect of managing a household together. Because I found as a homeowner and just running a home, it can be pretty overwhelming to keep track of everything. So I just launched the household planner to help people with that.
A few months ago, we on Consumerism Commentary posted an article about your planners, and it gave readers a visual idea of what the planner really is. For people listening to the podcast, how would you describe a planner? Is it different than a book or a workbook? What can people expect when they open the pages?
It's most like a workbook, and I actually got the idea because someone who'd read Generation Earn said, I really feel like I need some kind of interactive workbook to keep track of everything as I make these changes. So that gave me the idea. So it's pretty much like a workbook. When you make your order, you get the document, which is in a PDF, and there's a lot of space for you to customize and write down your own notes and jot down things that come to you as you read the various strategies and advice tips. So it's sort of like a mix between an ebook and a workbook. But the whole point is that it's interactive and you can really make it your own and keep track of your own changes and goals that you're trying to make in your financial life.
I'm familiar with a lot of different kinds of budgeting spreadsheets, templates, and software and stuff, but is this more high level?
It's not like highly technical or anything like that. It's sort of about getting at your big picture goals, financial goals for your life and how to achieve them. Because, of course, so many of us have big goals in mind, whether it's taking a sabbatical from work and traveling or starting your own business or buying a house. Everyone's are different. But the hard part is actually figuring out what steps you have to take to get to them. So my idea, my concept is to really help people focus and identify those big goals and then break it down in terms of what do you actually need to do to get there, whether it's paying off debt, figuring out what debt to pay off first, or maybe even changing spending habits or bigger lifestyle things, like talking with your partner with how to manage money together better. So it's really about customizing a plan to get to whatever your goals are.
Okay, so documenting the strategy as well as the tactics.
Yes, exactly.
Is there a type of reader that you feel that the planners reach differently than, say, a 300 to 500 page book would?
I love the whole concept of Etsy and the kind of customers and people that shop there. It's really targeted at sort of handmade
oriented culture. And so people who are looking for something visual, who think of themselves as right brainers, my sort of ideal customer who I think of is someone who is more creative minded. So maybe they work in a field where they're using their creativity. I've heard from a lot of actually yoga teachers and illustrators and people who work in creative fields who just feel like a lot of our financial advice coming at us does not relate to their lives because it feels like, oh, they need to go learn how to use Excel first. But I mean, we of course don't need to know how to use Excel to be on top of our finances. So it's really aimed at more of like a right brain oriented kind of person, a creative person.
Since you mentioned Etsy, let's talk about that for a little bit. What has the process been like creating these products for sale on Etsy?
It's so surprisingly easy. I had my idea, and then within, I think, about 2 weeks, I had opened up my shop on Etsy. And then I think 2 weeks after that, I made my first sale. So I'm in love with Etsy. I think it's an amazing website. And there's so many similar websites. People use all kinds of websites like Fiverr, Craigslist to get their products out there. What I love about Etsy is that it's really pretty. It has a really beautiful interface. You can customize it, upload your own graphics. It's a really amazing interface that anyone can use.
Would you do it again?
Absolutely. My dream is to expand this and become, you know, make Palmer's Planners a household name. So we'll see. But it's so easy to use, and I really can't recommend it enough.
Do you think that other aspiring authors should self-publish in this manner? Or is it really more geared towards people who create products that do cater to the more creative or right-brained individuals?
I think that's such an interesting question because I think as writers, and myself included, we're always trying to think of how we can monetize our writing because it's hard out there. It's hard to be to make money and support yourself as a writer these days. And so what I found to be really hopeful for the future of writing is that it's so easy for all kinds of writers to turn their writing and their ideas into something that you can monetize. And I've since learned about so many other writers on there that do so many creative things. One woman actually turns her typewriter keys into jewelry. So there's sort of like spins on like the craft of writing up on Etsy. And I think that a lot of writers are finding these days that if you do take some control, maybe not self-publishing all of your work, but or some people find great success with that, but at least doing a mix. So maybe if you are writing for other outlets, you also mix in some self-publishing through Etsy or other sites just so you can have something where you have complete control. And one huge benefit of that I found is that it's just so quick and easy. When you're working with a big publisher or a magazine, it takes so long to get your ideas through the editing process, through the publishing process. When you're self-publishing, you just click a button and it's up there. So that's something that's really gratifying as a writer.
It's good to hear that Etsy is also usable and attractive because in my freelance usability information architecture work, I'm always telling people to go where the audience is. And just for example, like I really enjoy Vimeo.com, but the audience is so much smaller than on YouTube. So I have to encourage people to go on YouTube. And Etsy is, I think at this point, a household name. Was that one of the reasons why you chose to go with them instead of one of the others? Or do you want to use the others simultaneously?
Well, I chose Etsy just because it fit with my whole creative sort of goal and outlook and the kind of person I was trying to appeal to. But one thing that your question brings up is that there's not an automatic built-in audience. So just because you open up a shop on Etsy doesn't mean that you're suddenly going to have hundreds of viewers and hundreds of orders. You have to really work to bring in the audience. So, I mean, I tried to do that. Marketing is definitely not my strong suit, but I tried to do that through everything from Twitter to guest posting to writing about the planners myself. So you still have to work hard to bring in your own audience. It's definitely not something that happens automatically.
And since you've had experience through a traditional publisher with Generation Earn, do you find that the publisher would assist enough in the marketing plan so that you could use them to build that audience? Or do you find that, you know, you're usually doing the same amount of work, whether it's through a traditional publisher or through your own Etsy site in terms of marketing?
It's totally different. And that's one of the great, wonderful things about working with a traditional publisher that I loved, is that they have a whole built-in distribution network, marketing network. They are automatically reaching out to hundreds of contacts that they have. They're putting your book in stores and, you know, Barnes and Nobles across the country. So that is huge. And you cannot deny the power of that. So without that on your own, you're just doing whatever you can. And I mean, some people really thrive on that. I personally loved the support of working with a big publisher. And for me, the marketing side of things, it's not something I really, that's really the hard part about self-publishing. And definitely, I think that having that structure from a traditional publisher is a huge asset. And of course, that's something that I don't have with my Etsy shop. But there's other plus sides with Etsy, like the quickness I was talking about and just the gratification that comes from having full control that kind of compensates for some of that. So there's pros and cons of each.
You're a new mother, is that correct?
I am. I have a daughter.
Did some of the experiences that you've had with motherhood inspire you to help other mothers through the baby planner specifically?
Definitely. And actually, that was one thing that motivated me as a whole, because when I became a mom, I realized I need more control over my time and my life. And so being able to work on my Etsy products in my free time when my daughter was sleeping or whenever, it was much easier than something that had more set hours. So just as a lifestyle thing, I think that's another benefit of going the self-publishing route on your own.
Was there anything that you discovered about being a mother that you wish you had known earlier?
Ooh, that's such a big, massive question. I guess what I didn't know and what I couldn't have known is just how completely life-altering on every level it would have been, and really affecting how I think about earning money. I mean, it becomes much more crucial to make sure I have a way of supporting not just myself, but my family. So everything sort of shifted and shifts, and it's hard to sort of predict that, but it definitely changed how I think about earning money and managing money. I mean, I feel so much more motivated to save money now just because financial security seems so much more important. Knowing that I can, you know, pay my mortgage is more important than ever.
Kim, you know that new show on HBO, Girls?
Yes, I love it.
I follow a lot of comedians on Twitter and they won't shut up about it. And it seems like there was, in fact, quite a lot of backlash about whether they're supposed to be, you know, role models or whether you can even identify with these characters. They focus on recent college graduates, and at least one of them is struggling with money. And that's a demographic you've been studying for a long time. Hannah, the main character, does she reflect what you've been seeing in the current generation?
She does. I actually think that the show really gets at sort of a unique moment in time that's quickly passing. I think that she represents people who graduated maybe a year or 2 to 3 years ago. And it looks like for the people graduating this year that they're graduating into a much more sort of optimistic, easier to find a job situation. So that's what I think is so interesting about the show, that it really captures this group of people that graduated just as the economy was at its worst. So hard to find jobs, so hard to feel like you're using your college degree if you have one, so hard to feel like you have a career that you want to fully move forward with and you're not just sort of finding a job to pay the bills, which of course so many people are doing right now. And so I think it really captures that deep sense of frustration that a lot of 20-somethings feel.
Do you think that the baby boomer parents who might be struggling with their own retirement plans with, you know, they weren't helped by the recession. Do they have an obligation to continue to help out their adult children who are also struggling?
It's so funny because this question of whether or not parents should or are morally obligated to help their kids, I get so much hate mail whenever I write about this. It's such a sort of tense topic because I think it's so split along generational lines. And people who graduate in healthier economies and parents, people who are baby boomers now, just often don't get how hard it is to be a 20-something. And they feel like 20-somethings are so entitled to even expect any help from parents. But on the reverse side of that, it is true that it's so hard to be a 20-something in this economy, and that if parents can afford to give some financial support or at the very least really hefty emotional support or inviting kids to move back home, it can make a huge difference in your overall life. If it lets you take a job that's more in line with your career, but maybe doesn't pay as well, so you can get ahead later. I mean, that kind of support can be crucial. Mm. So I don't think that parents are obligated to help their kids, but I think that if parents can help, that it can just make a huge difference to 20-somethings' lives.
How much of the current difficulty do you think is because it's harder to find a job, or salaries aren't increasing the way that they should be, or things are just more expensive? Everybody's got to have an iPhone or whatever Android thing.
Right.
The mobile data plans are so expensive where, you know, our parents, for example, did not have that kind of pressure to always be.
That's true. And I think that's an element. But I think the far bigger factor is on the earning side of things. Mm-hmm. And the fact that even if you have a job, it might not come with the kind of benefits that let you have health insurance and other kinds of protection that protect you from setbacks that you have inevitably. So I think the far bigger side of things is just income security and feeling like we're going to keep earning more money, that we can count on the jobs that we have. So many people are if they're not unemployed, are underemployed. And so I think that side of things and the psychology of feeling uncertain about your current and future earnings, it just has such a big impact on how you think about life. And one really interesting finding actually that just came out from the Pew Research Center is that a lot of 20-somethings are actually acknowledging that they're going to be delaying huge life decisions, marriage and having a baby, because of the economy. So it really gets at just how deeply 20-somethings are affected by how hard it is.
Just out of curiosity, how do you feel about current proposals to forgive student loan debt?
I have always thought it can be so useful and incentivizing to have some of the student loan plans that actually encourage people and pay off debt when you work in certain jobs, like public sector jobs, where you know that you're going to be earning a lower income. So I think that all of that can be so useful. And I mean, the most important thing is just to understand the rules that you're playing by. And one thing that a lot of 20-somethings find difficult is that the rules seem to be constantly changing. So you don't even know for sure, okay, if I work as a public school teacher in New York, maybe I'll be eligible for this, but not if I move to California. Or just knowing the ins and outs of all these rules is so confusing. And the fact that the laws keep changing and getting updated, some of it's really helpful for a student or people with student loans, but you have to be on top of these rule changes. So that's the biggest thing I notice, is just that it's hard for people to know what the rules currently are and how it applies to.
Do you have any recommendations for staying on top of that sort of thing?
You know, I have searched for useful websites for this, and I always come back to the actual Department of Education website, their student loan section, because they have things updated, and you can, I mean, it's not always in the easiest to read language necessarily, but you know it's the truth. And the big thing is to make sure you avoid some of these websites that are really preying on vulnerable students and people that might not understand everything. So, I mean, the most important thing is to make sure you're avoiding misinformation and potential scams.
Perhaps that's an idea for a future planner.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you. I'll write that down.
You also wrote an article recently for the U.S. News and World Report about how young women, they expect, you know, obviously equal pay, or should get equal pay to their male counterparts, but also that they are prioritizing motherhood quite highly. Can you tell us a bit about what's going on?
Yeah, this I think is fascinating. And I think it's a really optimistic sign that young women feel like at least they will be able to combine both motherhood and careers. So what the Pew Research Center found is that young women are increasingly saying that they value being successful in specifically a high-paying career. So they care about earning a decent salary. And actually, even more young women said that than young men said that. And that's a shift. Hmm. So yeah, it's fascinating. So it really suggests that maybe young women are, to them, having a successful career is really important to them, even more so than it is for men. And that gets to at the whole girl, what we're seeing on the girls show on HBO, as people struggle with both their personal lives and their professional lives. And what it really says to me is that what young women think that it's possible. And so for so long, people have really felt like, you know, it's all or nothing, you can't have it all. And a lot of us working moms struggle with that issue, of course, all the time. But I just took this as a really optimistic sign that people think they'll be able to combine both.
When the Pew Research Center announced the survey results, they also talked about women's salary in the workplace. And right now, women between the ages 16 and 34 are earning 90 cents for every dollar earned by men in the same age range. And that's a significant increase over the past couple of decades, but it's still not at parity. Do you think that this trend is going to continue and that at some point women will actually be earning salaries that are equal to men or even higher than men as men continue to seeing a larger role for them within the family?
This is such a complicated and sort of fraught research topic because it's so hard to really know what's driving that difference. And of course, there is a good chance that a small portion of that difference can be explained by just straight up discrimination against women. Also could be affected by the fact that women choose different fields. They might choose to work different types of hours or not go after the bigger leadership roles that's possible. There's so many possibilities for what explains this difference. So it's really hard to predict what will happen going into the future. We are, of course, seeing the trend that that men's and women's incomes are coming closer together. And that's especially true, like you said, for young people. And so I think that's a great sign, but I still want to know what is causing this difference. Is it because we women need to negotiate better when we take that first job or choose our jobs and fields and college majors better? I mean, there's so many different factors at play here. And what this study revealed too is that as women get older and progress in their careers, the income disparity becomes much greater. And so part of that is probably because women are more likely to scale back to take care of children. Mm-hmm. But it could also be because they don't want to take the bigger management role or because of the field that they chose. So it's a really interesting dynamic, something that I'm just, you know, fascinated by. And I think that really the research here hasn't totally, and maybe it can't totally delineate what's going on.
Well, thanks for going over all that with us, Kim, and good luck with the planners.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
And thank you, Luke, for helping out.
Absolutely.
That was Kim Palmer, the author of Generation Earn and Palmer's Planners. Learn more at generationearn.com. Join us again next week for more great personal financial advice and information.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Consumerism Commentary Podcast. We welcome your feedback. Please email us at podcast@consumerismcommentary.com. To subscribe to the podcast or to listen to this or other episodes, visit us at consumerismcommentary.com/pod or search for Consumerism Commentary on iTunes. The Consumerism Commentary Podcast is hosted and produced by Tom Dubeck, Brian J. Bush, and Luke Landis. The music is composed and performed by Mindcube. The podcast was founded by Luke Landis.